All right, he's ready and he's back. The creator, the man who birthed this podcast, the godfather, the boss man. Alex is back. Welcome back to the mic, sir.
Thanks, Dave. What a long, strange trip it's been.
Absolutely. And a lot of days in between on those long, strange trips. So let's talk about them in the days between. All right, there is something that we, I think, both want to say, but I will let you say it first. Go ahead.
Man, so many days between. It's good to be back with all of you guys. We talked about this, and Dave talked about it in some of the PSA episodes as well, but like, we just both had a lot of stuff going on in our lives this past fall. Both of us moved. We definitely talked about that. Both of us started new jobs. And both in new walks of life.
Yeah, not new fields, but like, that's a good way to put it.
It's not a change where it's like, I'm doing a job at one place and now I'm switching to another place and doing the same job. Like, there's been a learning curve for both of us as we've gotten into new situations.
Exactly.
And for me, I'm working in the democracy reform space now. So trying to rescue our democracy from the fringes that are pulling us apart as a people, which is, in my opinion, very noble work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love what my company's doing. I think that we can really make a difference. But as you can imagine, 2024 is a really important year for us. We have a lot of stuff that's on the ballot. There's going to be a lot of attention in the US on our elections in 2024 because it's a really important one. And so as 2024 continues to go on, I've been slammed busy for the beginning of the year. And it's going to keep getting busier as we gear up toward election day. So I think that I described this to Dave as a TTFN episode, a ta-ta for now. Like, we're back together. We're going to talk about Dave's Picks volume
49.
I was going to say that. And then I hesitated for a second. Yeah. Dave's Picks volume 49. We're going to do a little song draft so that it's a lighter, shorter episode than you're probably typically accustomed to. And then we're going to dive back out of the feed for a little while. Not sure exactly how long until we can kind of both get settled in and have more time to put in the effort that we feel is necessary to produce consistent and good episodes. So thank you for sticking with us. If you're listening to this episode and you know, you just saw Working Man's Pod pop up on your feed for the first time in a long time, you know that we always love talking with each other and with you guys. Yeah, it's good to be back, and it'll be bittersweet to go away for a little while again, but it's necessary for better or worse.
Yeah. And it's not like we're not an operation that puts out like one or multiple episodes a week and runs ads and does this full time. Like, this is the hobby that brings us joy, but also doesn't bring us any money. And so the stuff that does bring us money, unfortunately, has to be prioritized first. Yeah. For me, it's kind of like you said, just still kind of learning the ropes and getting the feet wet. So my plan, and it's a good transition to talk about something else in the days between, is to come back when there's something to talk about for Dead & Company. And Dead & Company surprised us all by announcing initially a 14-night run at the Sphere in Las Vegas. And they've added shows. Now it's what, up to like 21 or 22 shows?
I think 22, yeah.
22. All throughout like the end of May and June. And I think it goes past July 4th, right? Too.
It's like, I believe so.
Mid-July now. So, you know, when that dropped, it was a surprise. And my thoughts at the time, I was a little confused and slightly frustrated just because of the emotion. And I know you were there for like one of the last shows in San Francisco, and our buddy Zach Cropper was also there. And like the emotion and the tears on stage from Bob on the final night, you know, kind of made this announcement feel a little like cheap and kind of like a money grab. And that was my reaction for about 10 minutes. And then I realized we'd get more Dead & Company music and a shit ton more of Dead & Company music.
Yeah.
So that frustration quickly turned to excitement overnight for me.
That's fair. I really was not all that bothered by it, to be honest with you. They said that it was the final tour. I felt like, you know, you and I are lawyers, like language means something. Mm-hmm. And like final tour is a very specific way of wording that, not final shows. Right. A lot of people picked up on that immediately too. And they said like the final tour.
And we talked about it too, in our like recap of all the Dead & Company shows. We talked about how this won't be the last time they play together. It's just kind of a shock that
so fast,
so soon after they're playing with each other and playing a ton of shows with each other.
Yeah. I think for me, I don't feel like short shrifted at all that I spent a lot of money and time to go to one of those shows in San Francisco, because it was still such a special experience, and I'm still really glad that I did it. And also, I don't think your plans have changed since we last talked about this. I don't think either of us are going to go to any of the shows in Vegas.
There is so zero intention of Working Man's Pod representation at the Sphere. None.
Yeah. I and not to say, I bet it's going to be amazing.
Oh, I wish I could go, but yeah, yeah. They're not gonna.
If you're going, it's going to be a truly once in a lifetime experience, because that Sphere it looks unreal. Like, that is going to be a show that you remember for the rest of your life. I have no doubt. Yeah. To me, it's just, as I said, you know, we're really busy this year. And also, we both have like weddings and a bachelor party in Vegas, coincidentally enough, that you and I went to last weekend.
Yeah, we saw the Sphere we waved at the Sphere when we
did.
By.
Yep. So it's just like, it's not in the cards for me. But the other thing for me is Vegas and the Dead seem so discordant. Like, in many ways, they're not, obviously. We don't need to get into all the specific reasons why, but to me, it's like, a lot of the best times I've had at Dead & Co shows are being out in at least a somewhat natural setting. A lot of places with lawns, you know, I've always been able to see grass at every Dead & Co show I've been to, I think. And this, you know, see the sky. And so I know that there have been like a million great Dead shows in domes and in arenas over the years, but Vegas is just, it's such a beast unto itself. And it's hard for me to think about the way that I enjoy shows, enjoying it to that same extent in Vegas. Now, I've talked to other people who feel completely the opposite, and including people who went to a lot of MSG shows back in the day. And they were like, this is going to be like that, except to a crazier extent because of the entire wraparound view, which is going to be a lot and probably overwhelming for a lot of people.
Yes. I read an article. If I can find it, I will post it in the show notes, but it's been a while. I read an article by one of the engineers of the Sphere. And if you are sitting in one of the two upper sections, which I think are the 300 and 400 section, those sections are, the curvature of the Sphere at those levels are designed to give you vertigo. They are designed to make your brain feel like you're moving, even though your feet aren't. So the advice from this, either the architect or the engineer, was if you start to feel like not okay and you're in one of those upper sections, just look at your feet, because you're not moving. Like, the dome does not spin around. It's right. It's stationary. So you just look at your feet. You let the equilibrium in your ears kind of reset. And then you very slowly like raise your eye line 10 degrees, 10 degrees, 10 degrees until you can stare straight up at the ceiling and watch your whole world spin out again. So if you're going to the Sphere, just look at your feet. It's all going to be okay. And maybe on night one, don't go crazy, because who knows what that's going to look like from in there.
Yeah, that's a great pro tip. I think that there's also like a take a break room, I think, on every level, where you can like go into a room where it's like quiet and everything is stationary and you can just take a breath, take a beat.
That's
gather yourself.
For the best. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing to have there. But yeah, again, I think it's going to be an amazing set of shows. I'm excited to follow along, listen live when I can, see what they do, how they push the boundaries of set lists, especially how well they're playing together. Because as we saw last summer, the summer before that, like, the chemistry is just on point with these guys. So it's going to be great. It's just not in the cards for us. But if you're going, have an absolute blast, and really just, I mean, I don't have to tell you heads this. You all do it every show you go to, but just don't take it for granted and soak it all up, because not many people get to see a band that they love in a venue like that. You know, a lot of people were going to the Sphere to see U2, even if they weren't huge U2 fans, just to see the Sphere. So the idea of getting to couple a band that you love, like really love, with a venue that's that unique, is just, it's going to be like a true once in a lifetime thing. So yeah, that's one big one. And then the other thing in the days between that happened is Dave's picks 50. So talk to me about that, Dave.
Yeah. Well, would it surprise you that Dave wanted a May 77 show as a, well, one, a Dave's picks, but let alone a Dave's 50th.
It would not surprise me.
No, not at all. So May 3rd and 4th, 1977 from the Palladium in New York. Those are going to be the shows. I don't know if it's the full May 4th show.
I kind of doubt it just because they usually don't do two, like four discers in 1 year. But then again, it is the 50th it is, one.
Yeah,
so.
I could see it because of the 50th. I could also see it as the May 3rd show in its entirety. And then the bonus disc is like 2/3 of the May 4th show.
I could see that.
I don't know how they'll break it out. But if there was a time to do a double four disc set, it would be for your 50th.
Totally. There, we did an episode about the Dave's Picks. I think it was 41 from Baltimore. That was in May 77.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find our notes from that because we talked about how I want to say those are the only two shows from May 77 that had not been released. Oh, okay. So in May 77, there were 19 shows. After Dave's Picks 41 came out, 15 of the 19 had been released. The only ones that had not been were the month opening three-night run in New York. Two of the three are coming out with Dave's Picks 50. And yeah, night one of two at the Fox Theater in Atlanta on May 18th. So those will be the only two. And then if you expand even a little bit further, in April there were six shows, three have been released. And in June there were four shows and three of those have been released. So the spring tour of 77 from April to June, that gives you a total of 29 shows, of which after this 24 will have been released, 23. That's crazy.
So what is that percentage wise? 83%-ish?
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild.
Gosh.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it was a good time for the Dead.
That's, yeah. It, you know, it's, I'm not going to complain about a May 77 release. You brought up Dave's Picks 41. That CD still is in my car as like one of the two sets of CDs that rotate in and out of the CD player.
Still just gets rotation.
It still does. It's still so solid and I love listening to it. It's just fantastic. And I think Dave's 50th will be excellent as well. But speaking of excellent Dave's Picks, Dave's 49 was pretty good too.
Yeah.
So let's get on with the show.
Let's go.
Dave's Picks 49 from the Frost Amphitheater on April 27th and 28th, 1985. I give the artwork for this release a 9 out of 10. I really liked it. I thought that I've never been to Stanford, but I think you can just tell a lot about Stanford and the Palo Alto area from looking at the cover. And you can also tell a lot about the set list, too. You got the Eyes of the World Kite, you got the China cat sitting in the tree, you got the birds for the bird song on night two chilling there as well. So I thought that the cover was also nice to look at, like the red and green was nice. Mm-hmm. Too, I enjoyed it.
I'm with you. I thought it was a really cool, mellow looking cover too. So I think that this year's artist in residence is off to a good start. But I looked up this artist when I first got the CD, and he is also like one of the most accomplished Dead artists who they've given the artist in residence job to. He's done a ton of official posters for them. I think he did the official artwork for Fare Thee Well. So he's been in the scene for a long time and doing like really cool artwork. He has a distinctive and very just cool looking style. So I think really good pick by Dave and co at the headquarters at the mothership. And mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what he's going to do with the three covers that he has ahead.
Oh, wait. Okay. Here we go. Steve Vance.
Yeah. It's, I mean, he's been around for a long time. I think he did the Sunshine Daydream.
I was just going to say that because I'm looking at it. He did the Sunshine Daydream cover for the Vanita shows.
Anyways, I think it was a great pick. And I'm excited. Like I said, I'm excited to see what he's going to do with it. But as far as like when this release is from, April of 1985, pretty much an untapped era of official release Grateful Dead music. I looked at 85 and there was one Dix Picks. There was the 30 Trips Around the Sun box set, which there's one from every year. And I think that those were the only two complete shows released from 85 before this one. And so the fact that they released two shows, you know, we've talked about 85, but
we have.
It's interesting that we have talked about, I think, more 85 shows than the band has put out official releases.
Yeah. And the key takeaway from the liner notes is that is going to change eventually. I mean, to sum up the liner notes, it's basically Dave Lemieux saying, man, 1985 is a better year than I remember. There will be more official releases from 1985. So in the next 3 to 4 years, I think that's going to change. I think there might even be a 1985 release next year. Like maybe Dave's 54 or 55 comes from 1985. Because the liner notes are him gushing over the 85 tour and reminiscing about it, listening for, you know, future releases and basically saying there will be more releases from 85 coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk high level about the shows. I think, so it's interesting when I think of 85, even though we've done some shows, I think probably like an up and down year, just knowing that the following year, Jerry went into a diabetic coma, his health could not have been particularly great in 1985. And so there are a lot of the, I think we talked about Cincinnati in 85.
Yeah. Which I think is the 30 Trip show, right?
I think so. And that one, we talked about how there are a lot of high points and then there are also some, I don't know, maybe not so high notes or points during the show. This one, these two shows, same thing. Like Jerry's playing is extremely consistent and very strong both nights. Like he does not really miss, but his voice, there are some moments that are not so great. You can tell.
Oh, so yeah, absolutely.
I do think that that is like one of the things, you know, if you're particularly bothered by like rough sounding Jerry vocals, then these probably wouldn't be your favorite shows. I still think you would enjoy them because the playing is so great and the set lists are really interesting, but your mileage may vary on like the actual vocals themselves. But what did you think about the sound? Like, I'm not talking about like the mixing. I'm talking about what they were playing, the tones that they were using. Mm. How did all that sound to you?
It all sounded excellent. I mean, I think in both shows, there's like a warm-up period, especially in night two. And we'll get into that with our selections. But once they get cooking, like the back half of both set ones really impressed me. High level for both of them. And then, yeah, kind of like what they were doing in the mid-80s is if you were at a hometown show, you maybe got something funky with the set list. We talked about the 1984 show with the Dark Star Encore. Like,
right.
And, you know, there's something weird there. And there's something weird here on night one, Weird and Beautiful, that the Dead only ever did once. So I think the play-in's excellent. They needed a little time to warm up with both shows. But once they got cooking, I mean, just excellent. And I noticed, too, the transitions in particular were outstanding for both these shows. Like songs that I don't really care about. Like, for example, in set two and night one, Going Down the Road Feeling Bad, A Demand Smart, Woman Smarter. Like, okay, I like Going Down the Road Feeling Bad. You and I could take or leave the second song. But the transition between those two is flawless, and it like makes the listening experience for Man Smart, Woman Smarter better.
I agree. And that was the first time they ever made that transition. So it's not like that was something that they had worked out before. They were just feeling it and went for it. They did it one time after this, but that was it. So not exactly typical bedfellows, those two songs, and the fact that they stuck the landing so well. Another example of that, I would say, is in the second show, Crazy Fingers into Playing in the Band. I really like that transition. It reminds me of a sunrise. Like it just slows way down and gets so mellow and then just come like bubbles back up. And I mean, yeah, I think that that's an astute and accurate observation. The transitions are great. And that's a sign that like things are going well on these two nights. So I thought overall these were really good shows and I'm glad that they released them.
Same. I'm thrilled, especially because, I mean, like you said, this isn't May 77 where like every song, almost every show now is released. This is a year that's a little bit of a relative unknown for me as a younger Dead fan. And so it's nice to explore and hear like new avenues of sound.
Yeah, it's got untapped potential. So do you want to let the masses know the format of what we're going to do with these shows?
Yes. So after I educate you on who was born and died on these 2 days, April 27th and 28th, we're going to do a song draft with each of us having six selections. So there's two nights. So one of the selections has to be from set one, night one, one from set two, night one, one from set one and set two of night two. So that's four. One of any of the encores. Night two has a double encore, so there are three songs to pick from. And then the sixth is a wild card, and that's any song from any show. And that's designed to have there be a bit of strategy. So if you take a song, for example, from night one, set one, and I like a different song, that song doesn't get pushed to the very end of the draft because I know you can't take another one. So the wild card selection allows there to be some strategy and gamesmanship going on back and forth.
Yeah. And I love the wild card edition. While we're talking about the draft and before we do birthdays, let's set the draft order. So we're going to do a random number generator, 1 through 65.
Okay.
Price is Right rules, I think we're both comfortable with.
Absolutely.
All right. With that being said, I'll go first. And I'm going to pick the number 31.
Right in the middle? Okay. I got to do it to you.
Don't do it.
Give me...
You can do it if you want, but...
We're recording this on St. Patty's Day, so give me 17.
Okay. And it's 34.
Oh!
Man, if you would have done it to me, you'd have been all over it. All right, I will take the first pick when the time comes, okay. And then you'll get picks two and three, and then it'll come back to me.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so tell me about these birthdays and what's going on in the world.
All right. Well, 1985. What's going on in the world? You know this movie, so I feel comfortable asking you blindly, what do you think the number one movie of 1985 is of the entire year?
Ooh, number one.
Think about like that.
Back to the Future?
Nice, you nailed it. Back to the Future, the number one movie. It's that summer blockbuster. The number one movie for the week of these two shows is a movie called Stick with Burt Reynolds and Candace Bergen. Great cast, apparently terrible movie. I've never seen it, but it has a 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, so like not great reviews. But I don't know. I've never seen it. In 1985, VH1 premiered, Larry King Live premiered, and the Golden Girls made their debut in 1985. So big year for TV. And in music, the top three songs of the entire year for 1985, Careless Whisper by Wham! Featuring George Michael, Like a Virgin by Madonna, and Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go by Wham. So it's the year of Wham! With some George Michael sprinkled in.
A super horny year. I mean, come on. One of those songs is about a one-night stand. The other one, Careless Whisper, is a sensual-ass song.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or what is it called? Leave a Whisper? Careless Whisper?
Careless Whisper, yeah.
Careless Whisper. And then was the second one Like a Virgin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's like as horny a year as it gets.
Absolutely. Not so horny. The number one song for the week of these two shows was the We Are the World charity single with like 100 famous artists.
Yeah, not horny at all.
Not horny at all. But, you know, a good song that raised a lot of money and pre-streaming. I don't know how this works anymore, but like before streaming took over music, it was the ninth best-selling record of all time, that like single song with all the contributors.
Yeah.
I don't know how that stat works anymore, but a top 10 all-time song in terms of sales, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's funny to think about how much the world has changed since then, because like back then that was viewed as like, I mean, it's that's a fine song. It's pretty cheesy. But it was like, oh my God, like all of these celebrities in one place. This is amazing. We have to buy it. And if that happened today, people would call
Well,
it
it
like,
did happen. Remember at the beginning of the pandemic, that
imagine.
god awful Imagine video with
That's
like
what I'm
eight
saying.
celebrities?
And everyone just shat all over it. They were like, this is so cheesy and contrived. I can't believe this. Like, I feel like that would be the general sense if this happened today. And so I think we've just become a more jaded society in a lot of ways. And that I think, hey, if you disagree with me, masses, definitely let us know, because I could be maybe underestimating our capacity for joy as a people in today's day and age.
Yeah, I think the complaint about the Imagine video was less that like the music quality was good or bad, and it was more of, we're not the same when you're recording this from your $1 million mansion while we're struggling to get through a pandemic. I mean, there are charity fundraiser concerts and stuff and benefits all the time that I
Yeah.
feel are well attended and raise good money, but no,
I
I
think
agree.
Live 8 still happens like every couple years or something.
Oh.
Like that's still a thing that happens. So yeah, you're right.
But I do agree with your overall point. I don't think that something like this would be as successful today as it was back then. Birthdays, April 27th, Lizzo, Corey Seager, President Ulysses S. Grant. Oh, by the way, for both birthdays and death days on both days, huge history buff day for both of
Okay.
these. So keep that in mind for throughout. Ulysses S. Grant, Ace Frehley, guitarist of Kiss. And Patrick Stump, the lead singer of Fall Out Boy. So pretty good music day, too.
And my grandmother.
And grandma. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're listening, shout out grandma.
She's definitely not, but it
Okay.
is her birthday. She'll be 88 on it this year.
Wow. Sad deaths on April 27th. Ferdinand Magellan, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and just last year, Jerry Springer passed away on April
Jerry,
27th.
Jerry.
The former mayor of Cincinnati, technically a politician, if you didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
On April 28th, birthdays, Penelope Cruz, Jessica Alba, Jay Leno, Alina Kagan, and President James Monroe. So two presidents and a kind of stacked birthday day, right?
Yeah.
Sad deaths, Gavrilo Princip, who assassinated
Oh,
Franz
wow.
Ferdinand. Yep,
Yeah.
the Black Hand member. And Benito Mussolini.
Wow,
So
lots of World War One and Two people.
again, a huge history buff day for these two shows.
Yeah, big day in Central European history.
Absolutely. The last thing to talk about, the venue, Frost Amphitheater, in Stanford University. It's an outdoor amphitheater that holds about 8,000 people. The Grateful Dead, they played there 14 times, all in the 1980s. And I have some reviews of the Frost Amphitheater because I've never been there. So I wanted to get a feel for how the Frost Amphitheater is. So I've got two reviews that are dead themed and one that's not. Where do you want to start?
Sandwich the one that's not in between the two dead ones.
Okay, interesting. Interesting. Okay. Well, we'll start with the review from Terry, review from way back in 2008. Quote, "This place used to be the place, all caps, to go to a concert because it had everything. A great stage, great seating, incredible parking, just the best. But since Stanford went corporate a few years ago, it doesn't hold many shows anymore. The Dead used to play here every year and it was quite the scene. But Stanford put the kibosh on anything fun anymore. Now the only way to get in to see Frost is to go for a graduation. But if you don't know anybody, why go? It's too bad because this really could be a cool place to see outdoor shows. I'm giving it 5 stars for the memories and the potential, but those days are gone forever and the memories of those who were there." I
Wow.
love that. If you don't know anybody, why would you go to a random college graduation? I don't
Look,
know.
yeah, we can all agree on that. Graduations when you do know someone or when you're graduating are not particularly fun. So if you
No.
didn't know anyone, that would be like probably the second ring of Dante's Inferno.
Okay, so I'm sandwiching in the only bad review, the one-star review here from
Ooh.
Katie H. from August of 2023. So it's very recent.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, went there for a concert and paid $15 for the shittiest piece of pizza I've ever had. The crust was so hard. It was literally cheese on a brick. Then I read...
I like that that's where the review starts. Like, I don't care about this venue. This piece of pizza sucked.
Sucks. Then I regrettably got a pretzel, hoping it would be a little bit better. And it was also awful. Just stop serving food, please. Just, period, end quote.
Wow.
Which makes me think that maybe she went to say just stop again, like she was emphasizing it, and ran out of room in the review. But both of these other reviews are longer than this one. So she went just, period, and ended her review.
It's weird. You could almost interpret that as her saying, like, if they just stopped serving food, this place would rule. But their food sucks so much that I'm
so
giving it a one
bad.
star review.
Yeah. And then to bring us to kind of bring us back and right the ship, a 5-star review from Paul. Quote, on a nice spring day late in the 80s, I experienced a mystical Grateful Dead concert here. It holds a sweet place in my memory. Music flowing, the frost, comfortably friendly environment, and this particular mellow slash warm audience all fit seamlessly together. Then at a turn point in a song, seemingly on cue, a golden eagle flew low and slowly across frost. For me, a frozen moment at which the audience and the front stage band members, Bob and Jerry, watched the bird. This may have been the last time the Dead were allowed to play there. Frost is a special place, whoever plays there, end quote.
Wow.
And I thought
Well,
that was a beautiful picture to paint of the amphitheater, and a good one to kind of redeem us from Katie's bad pizza.
Definitely. So the last time they played there was in 89, and that was a spring show in May. So it could have been that one. They also played there in April or May of 88, 87, 86, and 85. So we have it pinned down. This Golden Eagle show would have been in the late 80s. I have a review of this show that I wanted to share with you.
Yes.
All right. So this is from the 428 show from Iowa Nick, NIC. The night before this show, a friend saw Bob Weir in the elevator and invited him to our room. He said, sure, why not? I was almost asleep, and when they came in, I asked my friend if he'd brought the cheerleaders, just being silly. I heard this voice say, I'll have to do, I guess. We ended up smoking a lot of weed and shooting the shit, and he put us on the guest list, not a laminate or a pass, just free entry through the back gate. The next day, the 28th, we went to go in, and they didn't have our names yet because Bob hadn't shown up. The person at the gate said, oh, that's where he was. We were looking for him all night. Finally, Bob drives up. He was driving some little car, nothing special. Sees us and stops to say hi and tell us, yeah, you're on the list. He gives the guy our names and we went in. Kind of cool. And that pipe was forever more known as the Bob Weir pipe.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Pretty epic. Also, it's cool that, I mean, it makes sense that, like, before the late 80s, when they really kind of had a renewed moment after Touch of Grey, that Bob would just do that.
Yeah, just
all right, what's up,
hanging out with some locals. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he only would have been at that time like 35 or 36, so if these people were, you know, if they were established enough that they had a hotel room and not just like camping out somewhere, they were probably in their late 20s or so. He probably was around the same age as these guys.
Yeah, good point. That's all I've got for fun facts and reviews. I do want to say before we get the draft started, the ability to download the MP3 links from these shows has been tenuous at best, pretty shitty so far. So if there's not music cut-ins after or like throughout the show, I do want to apologize in advance. And obviously for rights reasons, we can't like finesse in the actual CD audio.
Yeah.
I will do my best, and I will obviously cut this if there's no issues going forward and I'm able to do it. But I do want to say that there might not be song cut-ins other than the usual stuff that we've got.
Fair enough. Well, should we do the draft?
We should do the draft. Absolutely. With the first pick in the Dave's Picks 49 draft, Alex, Selects.
Man, I really have. I debated a lot. Obviously, I had a strategy for if I was the first pick, and I was thinking about what I was going to take. And I'm going to go with Night Two, Set Two, Playing in the Band.
Ooh, okay. That I think is a sleeper, and it's definitely a surprise to me. But tell
So,
us why you picked that first overall.
first of all, I get like most of the second set with this song. Playing in
What
the Band is
we should do is we should read that whole second
this whole
set
set. Okay.
so they know what you're talking about there.
All right. So the second set is an absolute goes into fest. Everything goes into everything. So Hell in a Bucket into Crazy Fingers into Playing, into China Doll. At the end of China Doll, I would honestly argue that they go back into Playing for a couple minutes, but we'll talk about that. Into Drums, Space, back into Playing in the Band after Space, then Wharf Rat, Throwing Stones, and Not Fade Away as the closer. So, I mean, that's a really good set. The Playing in the Band is like 10 minutes long. Then they go into China Doll, and at like the 6-ish, 6:30 mark, they go back to Playing, and then they go into this totally avant-garde type two jam with all sorts of interesting percussion. I think maybe marimbas or something like that. But I think it's debatable whether I get that ending chunk of China Doll, like the last 3 minutes, in addition to the 10 minutes of Playing in the Band and then the 4 minutes of Playing in the Band that comes out of Space. I
Here's
don't
why
know.
you do get it. Because when I took notes on this show after China Doll, I wrote play and reprise jam. Because I
Okay.
completely agree with you, and that is exactly what happens. They go into like a pre-drums jam with the play-in theme, and you've got Brent with like his clav tone or whatever it is on the keys that really makes it funky. But yeah, I think because you sniped it out, I'm very willing to give it to you.
All right, nice. So that's like 17 minutes of music that I got then with playing. The next longest song of the second set is like, I guess Wharf Rat is listed at 8:41. I just think it's a really good plan.
But
Like
you're right.
every part of it, like I said, the transition from Crazy Fingers in, I really liked. Great tempo. I love how active Jerry is right off the rip. And then around 2:30, we get into a really nice section, and I love what Phil's doing then. Jerry is kind of over the top of Phil with some really airy, sparse soloing, just leaving a ton of room. And the interplay between those two, and then when Brent starts to join in, is excellent. And then I like what Bob's doing too. He's just adding these little flourishes here and there. And it just all combines to make a really tremendous, easygoing jam in that beginning section. And then the song just completely, as it keeps going, it gets more and more chaotic. Mickey breaks out the cowbell. The tempo picks up. It gets more and more driven. And it becomes like a totally different thing by the end, which is also really cool and satisfying. And then when they wind it down into China Doll, I think that's a great transition. Then, like I said, that type two avant-garde jam at the end of China Doll. And then coming out of Space, it's also really cool. Like it comes out of nowhere. And it seems like maybe Jerry's doing that brings them back into it. He like teases it a little bit and then gets back into Space for a few bars while everyone else kind of finds the groove. And then it's just a super patient intro that leaves us with like two powerhouse minutes of playing in this like second delineated playing in the band on the set list. I would have enjoyed a nice Donna Scream for my money, but beggars can't be choosers. And then a cool transition out into Wharf Rat. I just really enjoyed the entirety of this segment of music, and I'm happy to have it with my first pick.
All right. And I love that you picked it too, because now I get like the song that I really want. And we get to talk about like the big kind of point of this release with the next pick. I'm going from night one, set two with my first pick. And we should read that and talk about it, and then I'll tell you which one I'm gonna take. So night one, set two starts with a one-off that the Dead did on April 27th, 85, and never did again. Scarlet Begonias into Eyes of the World. So two powerhouse songs that were never played together that came together on this night. From Eyes, they go Going Down the Road Feeling Bad, into Man Smart, Women Smarter, Drum Space, then Out of Space into The Wheel, then Truckin', The Other One, Black Peter, Around and Around, and then a One More Saturday Night set to Closer. I'm taking the leadoff spot. I'm taking that Scarlet Begonias and the first of the Scarlet Eyes rarity pairing.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it's with Eyes would bump it up and make it cool if it was an average Scarlet, but it's not an average Scarlet. There's some solid drumming, some bouncy bass, and the buildup from Brent at the 3 minute mark that like launches Jerry into his takeoff, I thought was just excellent. It's the number 44 Scarlet Begonias on Heady version. And I think maybe some of that is because it's paired with Eyes, and so the masses maybe knew about it before the release, but I think it deserves that, you know, kind of top 5% slot. It's some really, really good playing, and I'm honored to have that with my first pick.
That was number two on my big board.
Ah, okay.
Great pick. I love how stately it is in the beginning. Like they're really just kind of taking their time and playing very precisely. And then one of the notes that I have for it is full band interplay is on display, maybe more so than any other moment throughout this show. I think that just the way that they all kind of coalesce and are working around each other during Scarlet is extremely good and extremely satisfying. I think it's an excellent first overall pick by you.
Thank you. And now with that wild card selection, I
you
could
son of a bitch.
Screw you over. I'm not going to, but I just want to say that I could, and I'm not.
Look, what it wouldn't be screwing me over. It would just be, I mean, it would just be a decision.
Yeah. No, what I do have to do is I have to play defense from you doing that to me. So I got to go to Night 2, set 2. And I got to take the song that I was like hoping and praying for from that set. I'm taking the, once again, the set 2 leadoff, that Hell in a Bucket. Vocally, for the first half of the song, Bob is perfect. Phil is grooving right along for the whole time. There's a long, long falsetto buildup section which,
yes,
you know, if you're not into Bob's falsetto, it's not for you, but I'm here for it, man. I'm about it. It sounds good. Phil and Brent do an awesome job of like constructing a building a bridge for a transition. And so I'm glad that I get to snag both the set two openers from these two nights and get that hell in a bucket.
Yeah, I really like this. I also noted the transition. I thought it was great into Crazy Fingers. One thing that I noticed about this song that I don't know why I've never noticed it before, but the credited writers of this song are Weir, Barlow, and Midland. I didn't know that. So maybe
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me. But yeah, I mean, a great way to open the second set. It's a great length, I think. It's like 7 minutes long. It's, you know, gives you plenty of time for that falsetto buildup that you're talking about and for some nice work by Jerry and for that really cool transition that you talked about with Phil and Brent, but not so much that it's like it starts to feel stale or anything like that. Like it's, I think in that Goldilocks zone is just a really nice length.
There are 112 versions of Hell in a Bucket on Heady Version. Would you like to guess where this one falls? Not an exact number, but like, you know, maybe like top quarter, middle quarter, or bottom quarter.
I'm going to say in the second quadrant, so like between 25 and 50%.
So this ranks number 111 out of 112. Come on, masses. This has to move out of that penultimate spot. Like, this is some good plan. When I saw that, my heart just sank. Like, oh, come on. So I'm glad it gets redeemed a little bit with a second round selection here.
Well, I mean, okay, but to be fair to the masses, I bet that even like the top version of Hell in a Bucket does not have that many votes. I don't think that a ton of people are going to Heady Version to rep their favorite Hell in a Bucket. So it might just be the case that it's like a not super upvoted song. And then it's a performance from a year that had not gotten a lot of acclaim before this release came out. It's still foul. Don't get me wrong, but trying to cut the masses a little bit of slack.
Yeah. Okay. Your second round selection.
All right. My second pick is US Blues, the encore from night two. I'm playing a little bit of keep away because this was my favorite of the three encores. And I want to, there are only three options. So I wanted to make sure I get my guy, so to speak. I just think this is a perfectly delightful version of US Blues. I love the solo at 250. It's like exactly what I'm hoping for in a US Blues solo. There's not like a ton to say about it. It's US Blues. It's an encore. It's the length that you'd expect, 5 minutes long. One thing that I will say, though, is you are on the record of being very annoyed when they put encores out of order in these releases.
Yes.
And I will admit that after, so that this is a two-song encore, US Blues, and then She Belongs to Me. At first, when I was listening to this, when I was listening to Disc 3, I was like, this is a wild way to open set two. And I made a note to myself to look up how many times they'd open set two with US Blues. And then I looked at the actual thing and was like, oh no, this is the encore that they tucked into disc two. Okay, I guess that's where we're at. So yeah, I'm sure you were also a little bit annoyed by that, because I know that you're on the record as not a fan of when they do that kind of chicanery.
Correct. I was not as peeved as usual with this one for two reasons. One, like you mentioned, set two on night two is all just goes into, there's no break and nowhere to break it up. Kind of similar to Dave's Picks 41, where like that Terrapin through, I think it's Around and Around, is all on disc three and there's never a break in between all those songs.
Yeah.
And then what's really weird is on the archive, this is styled the exact same way. Like there's an error with the tape upload on the archive version, like the version available to the masses. And so it actually goes in this order on the archive.
Oh,
and weirdly, that made me less pissed about this.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if we did some dating, if someone just burned these discs onto the archive, because that would be a pretty dead giveaway if that were the case.
Maybe.
Interesting. Conspiracy theories abound.
Hmm.
All right. Well, I'll put on my tinfoil steely pin as I make my fourth pick, because I believe I'm up again. So we're at an interesting point in the draft
Third pick, though, right?
This is my, yeah, third pick.
Yeah.
So you have picks from two of our five options. You have not used your wild card yet. I have picks from Correct. Two of our five options. There is the obvious option of taking Eyes of the World. But instead, what I'm going to do is close out my three options from April 28th and go first set April 28th. So this set starts with a Give Me Some Lovin' into Mississippi Half Step Uptown Tootaloo, then New Minglewood Blues, Birdsong, Tons of Steel, China Cat Sunflower into I Know You Rider. So only seven songs. Because there are not that many options in this set, I'm going to go there. There are a number of picks that I think I could make here, but I'm going to take Birdsong. It's a good long Birdsong, 11 minutes and 9 seconds. And I just think it's a really interesting song. This central jam that makes up the meat of the song is just really interesting to me. It goes in a bunch of different directions. All of them, I think, have a really nice tone to them and just suit the song really well. But my favorite part is this little ring around the rosy that they do between 440 and 530. I like the descending riff that follows it too. It's just really, really satisfying to listen to. And so I just think this is a really, I think it's a stellar bird song. And to me, it was the high point of the first set. So I'm happy to have it. So give me bird song.
All right. I agree with you. I think that like disjointed jazz section and this in that section you talked about was good. This song is kind of like a good thesis statement for this April 28th first set. It, like, the mood is jammier and a little more exploratory with the songs that you read off, and there might not be a better set one jammy exploratory song than Birdsong. I mean, of the typically a set one song.
Yeah.
So that is a good pick. And now it's over to me. Huh. Well, I'm going to swing us over to night one, set one. And night one, set one opened with a Dancing in the Street into Bertha, which was cool. Mm-hmm. And then Little Red Rooster, Brown Eyed Women, My Brother Esau, Ramble on Rose, Just Like Tom Thumb's Blues, Cold Rain and Snow, and then The Music Never Stopped. This Ramble on Rose in the middle of the set is outstanding. And it's going to be my third round pick here. It's a strong bass in the beginning. It's got some good groovy wah, like kind of like Estimated Profit tone.
Love it.
That Jerry puts in the Ramble on Rose guitar solo. Mm-hmm. And then you get the high energy vocal Jerry at the Goodbye Mama and Papa part. At about the 6 minute mark, it's the number 24 Ramble on Rose on Heady Version. And I'm happy to have it as part of my board.
Damn. Yeah. I noted that wah part too. It's like a very MIDI-fied wah around the 4 minute mark. It's great. Love the tempo of this performance. And it's just like rip roaring, but not like super so fast that it feels cokey. It's
right.
Like just,
it's just upbeat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great pick.
Thank you.
I know.
And now, I mean, the pundits at home are screaming to take the Eyes of the World. Like the fact that I also have the Scarlet, it would pair well. It's a nice, you know, it's the nice wine that goes with the, I guess it's the cheese that goes with the Scarlet wine for a pairing. But I kind of just feel bad if you don't get one of those. But you did take U.S. Blues with your third pick. So give me the Eyes of the World to close out that Scarlet Eyes combo. It's the only time this combo's ever been played. And credit
it's right
to
that
the,
you have both.
Yeah. And credit to the drummers. I mean, it's literally a one-time only transition, and they nail it. And just, I mean, I could boil this one down to, like, this Eyes is credit to Bob and Jerry. No funny business, just the... just the main men crushing it. I could also talk about it for 10 minutes. I did think like of the pairing, the Scarlet was better, but I thought the Eyes was more fun to listen to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see that. I think, yeah, like better is in the eye of the beholder, obviously. I did agree that I enjoyed, I think that it was probably a more impressive performance. I had a lot more notes for Scarlet than I did for Eyes, but I did really like the transition into Eyes a lot. Like you said, the drummers know the transition. I also like just that there were a lot of fire teases and then they just go completely off the reservation. And the fact that they were able to do that and start teasing fire and then go into a song that they had never gone to from this, from Scarlet Begonias before, it's just super impressive. I would have taken this with my next two picks, so good job by you. But I also feel like it's right that you have both. So I can't be too upset about it. This is just a really nice 20 something minutes of music. I mean, the combo of the two is really satisfying. Sure, what I like more, like them only doing it once and it being this really special thing. I think that that is my preference. Or like if they did it a bunch of times, I kind of like that it's a one-time thing.
I do too. I think that makes it go from like great to outstanding or legendary or whatever, you like mythical, I guess, and that it only happened once and it was here. Yeah, if this is something that they had done like, you know, nine times scattered throughout, it would be cool, but not special. But here it's special.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You've
Okay,
got
so
two picks, and just to give you an update, you're clear on night two, and you've got your encore. So you have a selection from each part of night one and your wild card remaining.
okay. I'm gonna take my wild card with one of these two picks just because I mean, I'm gonna be boxed into a corner with my last pick anyways. I
Well,
mean, I guess
that Eyes of the World pick was my wild card. So
right, so I
your defensive playing, you can now, I'm not going to say rest
defense.
on your laurels, but you can kind of
Exactly.
sit back a little.
Yes, I know what your la where your last two picks have to come from, but the thing is, I also have already taken one from the first set in night two. And what's the other one you need? An encore, which I'm not going to take a second encore as my wild card.
That would be the jerkiest thing
So,
you could do at these shows.
yeah. So in that case, I'm going to leave my wild card. It's going to be the very last pick of the draft. And I'm going to go stock and I'm going to take a song from set one and a song from set two of night one in that order. So night one, I really liked the first set. I think that it was not particularly jammy, really, at all. I mean, honestly, like the jammiest song is Little Red Rooster.
Yeah,
And
it is.
so that was pretty wild. Great blues soloing in that by Jerry, by the way. But I'm going to take the song that comes right before it. I'm going to take Bertha. Just a rollicking performance, bordering on breathless at times, but it's pretty tight and it's a fun way to really get the show cooking. But what's funny about that is that they really get the show cooking and then bring it down to as slow a song as they possibly could have played right afterward. And, I'm not going to make Bertha guilty by association. I'm just going to say, standalone as a 6-minute experience, listening to this Bertha was really fun. I greatly enjoyed it and thought that Jerry's playing was excellent and that the band interplay was really good. So I'll take Bertha as my first set representative from night one.
Yeah, that's a good pick. And this Dancing in the Street Bertha combo to open up the whole Dave's Picks release. It's an interesting combo, and this is the second and final time they did it. They did it once in July 84, then here in April 85, and never again, that Dancing Bertha combo.
It's so interesting that they had all of these unique combos throughout these shows. So
Yeah.
that is cool. I like that opening 1-2 punch. All right, so second set. It's interesting. I've got two very jammy picks, Birdsong and Plan. And then I've got two more straight ahead picks, US Blues and Bertha. So do I go with the jam here? There's the thing is, you got the big jam from set two. Like even the other one is not very long,
right?
Or like open. So I'm just gonna go with the song that I enjoyed the most in set two that's not off the board yet, and that's Truckin'. I really like this cool little intro that they do. I think it's just a generally really solid version. Jerry's Indian bead string work in the midsection, he's just piling note after note after note, which is great. And then I also like Truckin's where you can tell that Bobby is just having a grand old time. He's got some ad libs going on. He just seems like he's having fun. And I can feel that through listening to it. And so it just made me feel good and I enjoyed listening to it. So night one, set two, I'm taking Truckin'.
Nice. I thought it was an excellent move from the wheel theme, like into the eventual, you know, opening notes of Truckin'.
Yeah.
And I thought that the drumming, and this really goes for the whole show, and it's kind of a shame we haven't really emphasized it more. The drumming is outstanding. And I think these are like some great shows for the drummers to just be on it. Like weird one-off transitions or just, you know, wheel to Truckin', I don't think is that unique, but they just nail it too. And Bill gives some like cool cymbal crashes off measure. Like usually after the fourth measure of a 4-4 song, there's a nice big cymbal crash. And here it's happening after like the first and the third. And it was fun to listen to. You could tell they're just having fun playing Truckin'. I'm going home. They're home, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. You're right. It is very solid drumming. I don't have, of all of my notes from these two shows, the word sneakery doesn't show up anywhere. And that's not always true in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good pick.
New York, Detroit, and it's on the same street. A typical city involved in a typical daydream. Hang it up and see what tomorrow brings. Dallas, got a song machine. Houston, it goes to New Orleans. New York, got the way it means. Just won't let you be. Meet on the street in the true love. Most of the time they're sitting and crying at home. One of these days they'll they better be going down to the door and down the street all alone. Like the dude on man once told me you got to play your hand. Sometimes cards ain't worth the dime.
I don't want to say it, but because you do have a wild card pick, if I got another crack at this night one set two, which is not fair to say because I already have two songs from it, but I just want to give a little shout out to the Black Peter. Like that Black Peter, I thought was, I did not think that this one sucked a dick, to use our friend from the audience and the Raleigh Dead and Company show last year. I thought it was nice.
Yeah. It's funny, real quick on that note, there was a post on the Dead and Company Reddit page yesterday that was like, Charlotte 2023 appreciation post. This is a show that I don't hear talked about that much. I have attendance bias, but I think it was a really great show. In particular, that Black Peter was great. And I was thinking about that lady, like, this lady might be reading this on Reddit and just fuming,
screaming.
Right,
yeah. I also have attendance bias because I was there, and that show was excellent. I completely agree with the poster.
Yeah.
But I am not allowed to take that song. I'm done selecting. So I have to take one from Night 2, Set 1, and then I have to take one of the two remaining encores.
You got some good options.
I do. I think. I do.
So Tons of Steel?
If I'm not allowed to take the whole China Rider, the whole Rider.
We're established. If you take a cat, you're getting the Rider accompaniment. Okay.
Yeah. Then I'm gonna take the China Rider. But if you didn't let me take the whole thing, I was gonna take the Tons of Steel. I kind of liked it. And it's not a song that, like, I really ever listened to.
No, me neither. I mean, this was the fifth time they played it live out of 29 times total. They didn't play it a lot. And so it's not one that I think is like a beloved one. But it was good. I mean, it's like just a short little first set jam, but it was kind of a nice little breakup between Birdsong and the Cat Rider that you just took. But tell me about why you like the China Rider.
I will tell you about this 80s Set 1 Cat Rider, which is a rarity. Once the calendar flips to 1985, it becomes kind of exclusively but almost a total Set 2 opening song, and that's about it. So a Set 1 China Rider is pretty cool. And once again, Phil is just blistering in the China half and still bringing the goods in the Rider half. He was on it this whole discs 3 and 4. He's on it. I said it was an excellent China jam and a cayenne pepper hot transition into Rider.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I noted at the beginning, my first note about the China Cat was, this feels very China Coke Sunflower in the beginning. Like, it's, they're scampering. And then they settle into the pocket really nicely during the first jam, and then just kind of evens out. The second jam is just like vintage Jerry Indian bead string. And then I thought that I picked up on Bobby being the first one to start driving them towards Rider. I loved the outro transition. There are parts of it where the drumming was like, I think, trying to keep up with how fast everyone else was playing a little bit, not like noticeably bad, but they're just the other guys were like screaming towards, I know you, Rider. That's the cayenne pepper that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And then the Rider was like, short but sweet. Like the back half, I think, was even more fiery somehow. And I was trying to picture, if I were at the show, how pumped up you'd be going into the set break.
Yeah. Your energy would be up for sure. Yeah.
So for argument's sake, I'm just curious, if you had to have chosen one of those, if we were going to upset our precedent, which one would you have chosen?
Oh, that's a good question. If I had to pick one, this is one where I actually think I would pick the Rider. The back half, because I think like a little more of the transition out was coming in the Rider part on the CD cut, and the Indian bead string that Jerry builds on it, I think, was just a little better than the China half.
Okay,
yeah, that's tough, but if I had to pick one, I think I would take the back half.
That's fair.
And now my last pick has to be an encore. When we should say the encore for Night 1 was Keep Your Day Job, which I learned after this, listening to this, that that's not a cover.
No,
I thought that was a cover of, you know, something.
No, that's a Garcia Hunter original, baby.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's fine. And then on Night 2, you had the double encore of U.S. Blues and my pick, She Belongs to Me. A Dylan cover that they played once in 1966 and then 9 times in 1985 and then never again.
Yes.
It's fine. It's okay. I mean,
it's better than Day Job.
It's better than Day Job. So it's it's my last pick. Yeah.
This is why I was so hard set on picking U.S. Blues.
Yeah, and honestly, if you didn't take it, I would have taken it in my rounds 3-4 wraparound. So
Yeah,
you
so
did the right thing by taking it.
let's talk about both of these songs really quickly. So Keep Your Day Job, obviously a very beleaguered song within the Dead community. People really didn't like it. A lot of people felt kind of attacked by it. And I get that. I think that this is a decent enough version. I wouldn't have had a problem picking this song on my draft if I would have had to for some reason. Like if you would have taken US Blues and then you're like, Encore, She Belongs to Me. I would have been like, all right, well, I guess it's a day job encore for me. They played the song as the encore 39 out of 57 times. And so I wonder if that might have also had something to do with people not being thrilled about it. It was like they're ending the show on this note with a song that they don't like and it leaves a bitter taste in their mouth. I'm not sure. She Belongs to Me, I thought was really good. It's the first time they ever played it as an encore. They only played it, like you said, 10 times. This was the fourth time of those 10 and the third in this month, April 1985. So the big month, the biggest month for She Belongs to Me. I also think the one that they played in 1966, there's no recording available for that show. So to me, that's kind of like okay, you allegedly played it.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's just strange to me. The following night was an acid test, and there's a recording of that. And I don't know. I'm sure that if we both found it as like they had played it in 1966, then they did. But no recording available. I would have really liked to listen to that one from 66 and heard what it sounded like back then. But I think that given the choices between Day Job and a Dylan cover, I don't think that you could go wrong with the pick that you made.
Thank you. And now it's over to you with your wild card pick to close us out.
And it's going to be another Dylan cover. Give me Just Like Tom Thumb's Blues. That's my
Wow.
wild card. That's as wild a wild
Wow.
card as it gets. This is only the third time they played this out of 58 times, mostly from 1992 to 95. So a mid-80s version is pretty fun to hear. I love Jerry's chatter with the crowd beforehand. He
Yes, and
says,
I love how they're like, we want Phil, and then Phil fucking delivers.
Yeah, it's great. And Jerry saying, yeah, we all want Phil. That just tickled me. It's just a nice song that I like to hear. Phil's voice sounds good, so I'm happy to have a Phil song on mine. You know, let Phil sing. They let him sing on this night, and I'm happy that it's represented in our picks in the draft.
Absolutely. And it's the number 7 Tom Thumb's Blues on Heady version. So you're getting a top 10 version with your last last pick.
Yeah, love it.
I like your pick, and I had an like a star, which was how I coded like songs that I would want to draft, depending on how it goes next to it. I do want to say that the next two songs, Cold Rain and Snow and Music Never Stopped, also both had stars on my big board.
Yeah.
And I really thought that just this, once this, well, once both first sets got going, it was good. But once this first set of the first night got going, it was just some top tier playing.
Yeah, from Ramble on Rose through The Music Never Stopped, they're just on one.
Yeah, which is why if all four discs were rolling toward a cliff, I would save disc one, because you've got that great night one first set, and we sneak in the Scarlet Eyes combo onto disc one. But if all four were rolling towards a cliff, which, and you can only save one, which one would you save and why?
It's definitely disc one for the reason that you just said. It's, I think, I don't even think it's like really up for debate. You could be like a huge playing head, and really, I mean, the post space section of that second night, really the whole second set, which is what the fourth disc is quite good. So I could see, I guess, some people choosing that, but you just get a little bit of everything in that disc one. You get like a songy first part. You have a fill song, and you have a great jam, like probably the best jam of the whole whole release at the end of the disc. I think it's disc one.
Well, unless you have any other notes or fun facts or what, like snubs of the draft, I guess we could do that. That's all I got.
No, I don't think we snubbed anything. I think that we drafted quite well. This was a great release. I'm really happy that we had it, and I'm excited to, you know, in just about a month's time, get Dave's Picks 50. I have not listened to either of those shows.
Same.
And so, you know, I'm sure that it's the typical 77 goodness that we're used to. And, you know, it's going to be sharp as a knife, like every release from 77 is.
Yep.
But I'm looking forward to it. So that's, you know, something exciting to come. And then it sounds like, Dave, you have some plans to maybe pop back in from time to time during the Sphere run.
Yes, it's definitely not going to be as extensive as our Dead & Company in 23 coverage. Like, there's not going to be a show coming out after every night. I don't know even what it's going to look like yet, but I do want to do something, whether that's maybe a recap of, like, if they do, like, for example, like a 3-night run, like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, maybe it's recapping that weekend, or maybe it's one, you know, larger general thoughts kind of after the first show and then after the last show. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but as we get new Dead & Company music, I do want to, well, one, I want to listen to it through Nugs, which hopefully that's still an option. I have to imagine it would be. And number two, talk about it. Cause if it's as good as their 2023 tour, then it deserves to be talked about. So I don't know what that is going to be yet, but I do want to do something for that.
Nice. Well, if I am able to, I will try to join you for one of those little check-ins. But yeah, in the meantime, you know, we never do calls to action to you good folks. That's not really a thing that we do. Like Dave said, we're not in this to make money or to sell ads or anything like that. But because of the work that I'm doing, I would encourage all of you to take a look at the way we vote. You know, not every country that has a democracy votes the way we do. Not all of them have partisan primaries where a fraction of a voter base gets to choose who their representative is in Congress. You know, Ted Cruz is one of the most controversial Congress people that we have. And he, you know, for the first few times that he was sent to Washington, he won his general election by a landslide because he was in an extremely conservative district. So the election that basically decided who was going to be the representative was the Republican primary, where about 3% of that district's voters showed up to vote. So if, like me, you think it's wrong that 3% of a district's voters get to choose who their representative in Congress is, take a look at some of the alternatives that people are suggesting about different ways we can do this, whether that's opening primaries and allowing independents to vote, nonpartisan primaries where everyone is on one ballot and it's a, you know, a true competitive thing, or a number of other ways. You know, it doesn't have to be this way, and our representatives don't have to be this dysfunctional. Congress last year passed a record low number of acts. They are doing nothing in Washington, And we have some big issues that we're facing. So let's, if you're in the US with us, let's make a change. I mean, we don't, it doesn't have to be this way. And I'd encourage you to take a look at what's going on, see if maybe there are options coming up in your state to vote in November and, you know, say that you want it to change. And, you know, if you disagree with me, then by all means, it's a free country and there are lots of different and worthwhile and probably correct perspectives. So, you know, I'm not saying that my way of thinking is the only way to think. I'm just saying something probably worth looking into if you're remotely as frustrated as I am with how our government continues to operate or not.
Do you, off the top of your head, have a list of the states? I know one thing that your work is trying to do is bring ranked choice voting to the masses. Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, off the top of your head, a list of states where that's on the ballot in November or before?
It's still up in the air in a lot of states, but some states where it may be on the ballot and where I would encourage you to look into whether it will be on the ballot would be Alaska, Oregon, Arizona, Nevada, South Dakota, Montana, maybe Oklahoma, maybe Ohio, Colorado, and I don't think I said Idaho. I think Idaho might be on the ballot as well. So if you're in one of those states, look into what's happening on your ballot in November and, you know, look into what these systems are, you know, how things might change. And, you know, if you think that it would change things for the better or if not, because, you know, one of the beautiful things about our system of representative democracy is that we, the people, get a say. It's not just the people that we send into Washington. A number of states have these ballot measure processes where a citizen can get signatures, gather support, and they can put something on the ballot that they get passed. You know, there have been a ton of victories in that sense in a lot of movements, gay marriage, legalization of cannabis in a bunch of states. That's happened through ballot measures.
Abortion access. Protections.
And protections. In Ohio last year, that was a really big one where they enshrined a constitutional right to receive a safe clinical abortion up to a certain point in a pregnancy. So, you know, the people do have power. And if there's something that's on the ballot in your state, make sure that you're informed. And yeah, this was a pretty big rant. You know, this is not a topic that we usually talk about, but again, it's what I'm working on and I'm passionate about it. And what the hell? I mean, we have a platform.
Yeah,
that's worth talking use about it.
Yeah. Do you remember way, way back, like after our fourth or fifth episode, you were able to see a geographic map breakdown of listeners, and there was one listener in the state of Idaho?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? So this is a call to action. If you're in that, if you're that one,
you're that one person
in Idaho, ranked choice of voting is on the ballot. So, so get out there and get your act together, man or woman.
Yeah. I mean, that's very true. I did forget about that. But we have listeners all over this great country that we live in. So, you know, if you're in a place where it's on the ballot or if you'd like to put it on the ballot, start gathering signatures. It's possible. And sometimes a big movement and a big change starts with just one person.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to get any better or more meaningful than that. So would you like to send us off?
Oh, well, I suppose I should. Yes. On that note, good folks, good masses, we bid you good night.
And I bid you good night. Good night. Good night. And I bid you good night. Good night. Good night. And I bid you good night. That's it. You got it.